It seems like such a throwback at first. It sounds like a mistake. Here's the headline. This weekend, five more names will be etched into the Vietnam Memorial, joining the more than 58,000 already in that polished black granite. The Vietnam Memorial? How can that be? The shadow of Vietnam hangs over all U.S. conflicts, but it's also been overshadowed by Afghanistan and Iraq. And the wall is supposed to be for men and women who died as a result of combat. That combat was so long ago. But the Department of Defense has determined these five men died decades later of wounds sustained in war. And today we want to focus on one of them. Charlie Sabatier was paralyzed by a bullet on the first day of the Tet Offensive back in 1968, hit while trying to rescue another soldier who'd been wounded. Charlie spent the rest of his life in a wheelchair before dying from cancer in 2009. In between, he became one of the country's leading advocates for disabled veterans and the disabled in general. He also met Peggy Griffin. They got married and had three children. He called them his miracles. And Peggy and the kids will be in Washington for the ceremony on Sunday. She joins us in the studio. And, you know, it was such a loss. He was just 63 when he died. But also, I know he'd want to be on the wall. So is congratulations a word to you?
Congratulations is not the right term. Honor, remembrance, those are really the words I would use. It's more of an honor to be added to the wall.
Well, and for some it's a struggle. We should say we know there's some controversy around the subject. The Department of Defense doesn't recognize people who claim to be victims of Agent Orange or suicides that families attribute to service in Vietnam. So you have to petition. And you did, and Charlie's name was accepted. And in his case, what he did, darting out to try to save someone, that's enough. But then his life since, let people know. First of all, we should say you're both advocates for the disabled. You are blind. I just love the story that's told about how, you know, when you were both very young and working as advocates, you were sitting next to each other and he was flirting with you, not knowing you weren't picking up his signals.
I just knew that there was this person to my left who kept sending me notes and saying yes, yes when I would speak, and I had no idea what he looked like or who he was.
Yeah. And then you discover that he's Charlie, there in the wheelchair. Who was he when he first came back from war? First of all, remind us, what was the world of a person in a wheelchair like?
He just was totally frustrated. He would get into a parking lot, couldn't open his door, couldn't put his wheelchair next to his car door to transfer. People would stare at him. And he felt intimidated. Sometimes he would just put his chair back in his car and go home. He couldn't get into movie theaters, restaurants, most banks he couldn't get into.
And then he went on to change a lot of things here in Boston. He worked for the city. He became the executive director of the New England chapter of Paralyzed Veterans. What were some of his accomplishments?
While he was at the city, he brought in a lot of people with disabilities to advise him. But he also worked very closely with the Boston Redevelopment Authority in changing the zoning laws in the city. And he worked closely with the traffic and parking. And he just revised a lot of different things and opened people's eyes in the city to what it meant to really include people with disabilities in city programs and services.
Yeah, like things like curb cuts. We take them for granted today.
Well, and even more minor things such as applications or telephone lines for the hearing impaired or deaf.
Elevators to get into play. I think he was instrumental in getting an elevator in Faneuil Hall, which is one of the biggest tourist attractions here in Boston. Well, and perhaps the most famous incident, shall we tell this one? He was asked to sit on a blanket on an airplane. Now, at the time, airlines said, we ask people in airplanes to sit on blankets because that's how we will remove them if there's an incident.
A survivable crash, yes.
He surmised what?
He felt that they felt that anyone who came in on an airplane in a wheelchair was incontinent and would damage their upholstery.
Well, he refused to sit on the blanket, and so he was taken off the plane. But then when he gets to court over this, there's no access to the courtroom.
It was a perfect demonstration of why the Americans with Disabilities Act was needed and why Section 504 of the Rehab Act was needed, because there were just barriers everywhere you turned.
By the way, the airlines changed their policies. Jails and courtrooms got access. So quite a legacy here. And in his later years, he also worked for vets returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. What would he say about them?
When he returned, he was left basically to sit and wait in a hospital, and nothing was done to help him reconnect, re-acclimate himself to society or anything. And he felt that wasn't fair So he was very active and put a program together called Real Lifelines to help veterans in the hospital so they could start to rebuild their lives before they gave up. And then he also did work on it for employers and started America's Heroes at Work, which is a resource for employers for those vets with post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury.
What will you be thinking about on Sunday? That's a powerful place.
Well, basically, my theme is remembering Charlie. Transitions in his life, the big defining moment that when he responded to that fellow soldier's call for help, and that changed his life for the rest of his life and ultimately ended his life early. Those are the things that I'll be remembering.
But you've spoken of an irony, you know. That bullet that almost ended his life started a new one.
That's right.
It's Peggy Griffin. She'll be in Washington on Sunday to see her late husband Charlie Sabatier's name added to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial.